From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's July the 18th, 2008. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Dave Hastings at Midwest Grain in Bloomington, Illinois. In agricultural news, the Senate Appropriations Committee has allocated USDA's next budget, and the court battles over releasing CRP acreage are piling up. Dave Dickey will have details of these stories shortly. Also in this half hour, we'll hear a commentary from the Farm Bureau and take a look at what impact $130 crude oil average might have on 2009 cost of production. It all happens on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of WILL, public radio from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
Taking a look at the numbers as they settled in Chicago on a Friday afternoon, September wheat futures lost 5.5 cents today, settled at $8.04. December at 8.28 and a half, down 5 and a quarter. And the March futures down a nickel at $8.51 and 1 half. September corn futures $6.09 and a half, down 21 and 3 quarters. December futures at $6.28 and a half, down 21 and a half. And the March contract at $6.47 and 3 quarters, down 21 for the day. May futures at $6.59 and 3 quarters, down 21 and 1 quarter. August soybean futures $14.70, down 51. September at $14.58 and a half, 49 and a half lower. And November beans down 50 cents. At $14.48 for the day. January futures, $14.63 and 3 quarters, down 50 on the afternoon. August bean meal futures at $3.96.30, down $13.10. August bean oil at $16.09, $1.33 lower. August live cattle futures, a dime higher today at $97.50. October futures at $105.10, nickel higher on the afternoon. August feeder cattle at $113.87 and a half, up $2.32 and a half, and the September's at $114.50, $1.42 and a half higher. August lean hog futures at $76.90, 20 cents higher. October lean hog futures at $72.65, down 25 on the afternoon. And the bellies are trading the July contract at $64.20, down $1.20. For the July, the August down 210 at $63.50 on the afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Here's what the outside markets look like on the afternoon. The August contract in the crude oil futures at $129.80 or 51 cents higher. September futures at $129.65 or down 53. August ethanol futures at $241.70, down 9 3/10. September futures at $2.39 9/10, down a dime and 3/10 for the afternoon. Natural gas trading the August contract at 10.59 7/10 of a cent, up 6 cents. September futures at 10.66 1/10, up 5 6/10. August gasoline futures at $3.16 2/10, down 1/10 for the afternoon. September futures off 4/10 at $3.18. Heating oil trading the August contract at $3.69 2/10, that's up 5 1/10 for the afternoon. August propane at $1.90, down 4/10, and the September futures are down 4 cents rather. And the September at $1.90 5/10, that's down 5 1/2 cents for the day. July gold futures at $957.30, down $12.70. The Dow Jones Industrial Average at 11,441. That's just about 4 points lower on the afternoon. And the U.S. dollar is currently trading at 72.19, down 0.04 for the day. The CRB index at 427.58 is down 5.8 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the two-state region tonight. Our own Mike Sola says in northern and west central Illinois, it'll be mostly cloudy, some scattered showers, a few thunderstorms. Elsewhere, clear to partly cloudy. Lows will range this evening from 65 in southeastern Indiana to 74 near Lake Michigan. Tomorrow in northern and central sections, partly to mostly cloudy, some scattered showers, a few thunderstorms. They'll be most numerous in the northern part of Illinois.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Grainfield Marketing in Normal. Grainfield Marketing can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at grainfield.com.
It's a Friday afternoon, time to take a look at the futures markets. Here on the Closing Market Report, we're joined by Mike Zuzulo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Let's tell me about the marketplace as you see it.
Still down in the mindset of fund and bank index type fund liquidation. There was definitely some weather play in the market. The spring wheat had a real nice showing today, about the only thing that had green next to it today. There's still some issues, and the crop's still in dire shape. You know, we lost 8 points on the good to excellent on Monday's crop report. Not much changes out there. So the spring wheat helped give us a little bit of weather premium in the wheat complex. That helped keep Chicago a little bit more bolstered. There's no real outright ridge present for the corn and beans yet, so that also was talked about today and probably added to the fact that no one really wanted to step in on the long side of the markets and try and say, this is a bottom. Let's go ahead and try and fight this fund liquidation. Also, some technicals played out here. You know, we talked about a little bit this morning. We did see a 10- and 50-day moving average crossover in Dease corn. We've got what looks to be a head and shoulders top in Nov beans. Both the Dease corn and Nov beans have lost some trend lines that are pretty important as well. So I think probably for us, 75% of the trade today and this week as a whole has been more outside-related, fund-related, in terms of them wanting to reduce open interest, reduce exposure in the commodities as a whole and tighten their belt some there, and then probably 25-30% weather, technicals, and then obviously the Argentine bean tax being repealed probably came out this afternoon and helped lend some more weakness to the market as well.
Well, in the corn market at this point, where are you going to say that they'll find good support?
I don't think you can yet, Todd. I think you're probably looking at the next good technical support just around $6. We have to go back and look at the longer-term charts, the monthly charts, and say, okay, back in 96, we made that high back around 554.5. That is starting to show up on the radar technically. I think the idea that we would guess at this point and say to our clients and have been saying to our clients is the worst may not be over because the funds may want to continue to reduce exposure. The biggest thing I heard this week was coming from Chicago and coming from news wires was the fund psychology, index fund related psychology is 1, preserve equity, 2, improve liquidity, and 3, reduce exposure in the leveraged or margin risk positions. And all three of those involved reducing their commodity position. So I don't want to portray this as, yes, we can get some probably weather bumps, and we hope maybe Sunday night we'll miss a few rains in the northwest section of the Corn Belt. Otherwise, we're a little bit worried.
Well, you know, if they're reducing exposure and you want to talk about commodities, you probably ought to talk about crude, which seemed to find some kind of base, at least for the day.
Well, I think there's a good point in that, and I think that was because Iran and the U.S. are going to sit down, and I think a lot of the exposure to the downside was limited or mitigated because no one really wanted to step in and sell any more additional crude at this point because of what's happening this weekend to see if there may be fireworks after the United States and Iran get together. So I think that was one of the main reasons why crude found some support. I think the other thing that naturally plays out is natural gas had a little bit more of a base because there is some heat showing up on some of these longer range maps. There's also some uncertainty about the hurricane and maybe a tropical storm being defined here next week. And so those are probably three big reasons why I think the crude was limited in terms of its downside.
So the crude on pause, at least until they figure out what's happening in the Mideast, and then depending on what happens, continued trek lower?
I think that's exactly right. I mean, it's a work in progress, and what we're looking at right now is a commitment of traders report here at 4 o'clock Eastern. That's going to be a big number for us because the biggest exposure the index funds have right now and where they've built positions since March of this year has been corn, sugar, and crude oil, and it seems like those have been the ones that have been hit the hardest this week, and if they reduce a lot of positions as of this current past Tuesday, then maybe we'll get a little bit of lightening up on the pressure. But I think it goes back to what Dave and I talked about this morning. I refuse to let 650 corn and $15 bean futures be let go of here. I'm just not going to let them slip away without chalking the wheels underneath us with some puts or getting some type of hedge in place.
Hmm. So what's the downside potential in the marketplace?
Well, if you use the index funds as your rationale, you look at what they did in wheat. In wheat, they've taken their open interest in futures and options back down to where they were back in 06. So they've actually dumped enough positions that we're trading where we were back in July of 06 as far as exposure in the index funds. That gave us about a 45% reduction in wheat price from the high to the near-term low. So another 60, 70, 75, 80 cents in corn is possible. If beans want to continue to follow this trend, then they could have an exposure of $1, $1.25. And I want to stress one thing. If you looked at just the supply-demand fundamentals of this market, the high, in our opinion, is not in, especially in the beans. And between the way the beans are acting right now and the way the wheat is acting right now, we don't feel like that's the fundamentals playing out, that it's more of this fund-related market.
Okay, so let's talk about what farmers, and I know you've given us some things, but over time, farmers have about 18 months generally to market a crop, corn and soybeans, and most of them are probably 30 or 40% sold. Let's say they are, and let's deal with corn in particular. They have a base under them based on crop insurance at this point.
Right.
What else do they need to do?
I would recommend, and we're recommending here to our clients to go ahead and push to 70% on corn and about 55 to 60 on beans, and do that with, especially in the corn market, and I would say also in the beans if you can get a decent put ball. But I would say work into the put mindset, and this is the absolute worst time of year to be asking clients to be doing puts because they just signed over a huge check to a lot of them did on fertilizer and new 09 inputs, and we're very sensitive to that, but we feel like the basis, especially in beans, is way too wide. We feel like, again, in beans especially, the crop's not there, and it's actually getting worse, not better at this point, and I think the crop conditions would suggest the same thing. And so our mindset is, if we're right and this is index fund related, which we think it is, then the downside would be rather quick, and it'd be rather nasty, and it would set us up for a pre-harvest low. So that all adds up to puts. If you want to do forward contracting and try and come back in and re-own before harvest, that's certainly on the table as well.
Okay, thanks much.
Thanks, Todd. Have a great weekend.
Hey, you too. Mike Zuzulo is with Risk Management Commodities Incorporated. He's in Lafayette, Indiana, joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. That one happens each and every Friday afternoon.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Dave Dickey, your Director of Ag Programming, is here now with a look at today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, the U.S. Senate Appropriations Committee yesterday approved a $20.4 billion spending bill for USDA and the FDA for fiscal year 2009. The bill is about $200 million less than a similar appropriation bill under consideration in the House. Senators attached an amendment to the spending bill that would stop USDA from allowing Argentina to export unprocessed meat to the U.S. A federal judge says the USDA failed to comply with a federal law requiring an environmental impact study before approving a program that would allow hay and grazing on CRP land. USDA announced that up to 24 million acres would be open after the primary nesting season for birds. The federal judge continued his temporary injunction against the program and said he would likely issue a modified injunction next week that would lower CRP land use to 2.5 to 3 million acres for hay and grazing. Meanwhile, another legal battle is shaping up over CRP acreage. Stuart Doan reports.
Ag Secretary Ed Schaefer could find himself named as a defendant in another lawsuit if he lets farmers put up to 24 million CRP acres back into crop production without paying a penalty. The National Wildlife Federation's Julie Sibbing isn't ruling out legal action. She says a penalty-free early release of the magnitude Schaefer is considering would result in a loss of billions of dollars of taxpayer investment in conservation.
A lot of this land is quite marginal and results in increased soil erosion, water quality problems, and a loss of that real economic generator in the plain states of pheasant hunting and waterfowl hunting.
In addition to eliminating the benefit to wildlife that CRP acreage provides.
There's, I think, at least three species of grouse, the sage grouse being one of them, that could become listed on the endangered species list, and I know farmers would certainly rather work on these proactive, voluntary programs like CRP than to have to come under the Endangered Species Act provisions.
Schaefer is not expected to announce a CRP early out decision until U.S. District Judge John Coffenauer rules on the critical feed use provisions. I'm Stuart Doan reporting.
U.S. Trade Representative Susan Schwab says she is, quote, cautiously optimistic that an agreement can be reached in the Doha round, but says a final deal depends on India, Brazil, China, and other advanced developing countries. Trade ministers from 30 nations are meeting in Geneva next week to try to reach an agreement on the parameters of changes to tariffs and other trade barriers. Meanwhile, the National Farmers Union says it's concerned that U.S. trade negotiators continue to insist on farm policies that decouple the domestic safety net from production. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming at WILL, Public Radio for the Farming World. I'm the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. You can hear that program tonight after 6 o'clock on our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. Well, up next, in today's Listener Opinion Forum, Shelby County Farm Bureau's Amy Rochkus digs into the farmer's share.
The reality is that farmers' share of retail food dollar for food eaten at home and away from home averages just 19%. Off-farm costs for processing, packaging, distribution, transportation, and retailing eat up the other 81%. The 19% is an average for all foods. The percentage is much lower for packaged and highly processed foods, and somewhat higher for products that move more directly to your table. And an excellent example is the farmer's share of the retail price of a box of cornflakes at just 2%. That amounts to a few pennies for corn growers when an 18-ounce box retails for $3.79. The story is similar for bread. About 9% of the retail price is the farmer's share, but not much goes back to the wheat grower, even when a 20-ounce loaf costs $1.90. Fresh vegetable and fruit growers take in a small share of the retail food dollar as well, about 25% and 30% respectively. Think about that the next time you buy a head of lettuce, which recently averaged $1.32 per head, or apples, which are just at $1.54 per pound. Compared to the fresh market growers, producers who grow vegetables and fruits that are processed, frozen, canned, or freeze-dried, for example, receive a smaller share of the retail food dollar, about 16%. Orange juice, which costs $1.99 for a 12-ounce can of frozen concentrate in a recent survey, falls into this category. Producers of fresh meats and milk do receive a larger share of the retail food dollar, largely because food products from their livestock and dairy cattle move from the farm to your table with less costly processing. The producer's share of the retail food dollar for fresh beef products averages 47%. For milk, it's 43%. Whole chickens are at 37%, and pork comes in around 34%. A recent national survey of retail prices found averages of $3.84 per pound for sirloin tip roast, $3.88 per gallon for whole milk, and $1.47 per pound for whole chicken fryers. After nearly three decades of very stable retail food prices, paying more at the grocery store is an unpleasant change for Americans, but acknowledging that changed reality provides an ideal time to take a closer look at what we're buying and recognize that the farmer's share of the retail food dollar is not responsible for our lighter wallets at the checkout. This is Amy Rochkus with the Shelby County Farm Bureau.
Amy Rochkus' comments are her own and reflect her opinions. They do not necessarily reflect those of this station. We strongly urge listeners like you to become involved by sharing your views as well. To do so, call us at 217-333-0850. Well, we've just heard what the farmer gets from his products, but how much does it cost to produce it? And how might that relate to the price of crude oil? We'll hear more about that relationship and its impact on the farm next. Last year, the price of crude oil was about $67 a barrel. This year, that average will most likely be $100. And next year, says a farm management specialist at the University of Illinois, the cost could rise to more than $130 a barrel. That expensive crude oil has a direct relationship with the agricultural industry, says Gary Schnitke.
The relationship's pretty direct. You know, fertilizers are pretty energy intensive to make, and seed chemicals are chemicals in particular are petroleum based. So as crude oil prices go up, those chemicals and the fertilizers go up. What we find is for every dollar increase in crude oil prices, we see a $1.50 increase in corn price or corn cost, and about a 90-cent increase in soybean cost.
Here's a different way to view that set of numbers as it relates to the cost of producing an acre of corn for the 2009 growing season. We'll use the $130 price tag on a barrel of crude oil.
Given that, we're looking at a significantly higher corn cost for 2009, and we're going to see break-even corn prices exceed $4 because of crude oil price increases. So we're going to see, you know, we've seen about a $50 increase in crude oil price, and that translates into a $75 to $80 increase in production cost on corn.
The break-even price for soybeans could be above $10 a bushel, with the cost of production increasing by $40 an acre due only to the higher price of crude oil. That kind of cost of production increase means farmers will have to start seriously thinking about next year's crop even before this one is in the bin.
For farmers, the big deal is looking at 2009, what we're going to bid for cash rent. And you know, prices are still likely to be reasonably good, corn, soybean prices, what we're going to be using for the budgets. But costs are going to be up another 70, 80, maybe more dollars for that year, and that cuts into what can be bidding in for cash rent.
It all means profit margins on the farm will shrink next season. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Doug Slayton in Galesburg at 309-341-5003. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Joining us on this Friday afternoon to take a look at the cash grain market here on the Closing Market Report is Dave Hastings of Midwest Grain out of Bloomington, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Dave.
Hi, Todd.
Are farmers moving any grain at all at this point, or are they still just watching it grow in the field?
Well, they've been watching it grow, but we've seen some light selling of new crop and some old crop as well as the prices have retreated from their highs.
Did that surprise you at all?
Oh, no, as you see prices go down hard like this, a lot of times we'll see this as maybe the beginning of the end. And so we've been buying small amounts of corn and beans, both all the way down. But, you know, every day that went by, Todd, was just another day of higher prices up until about a week and a half ago. So they became complacent and had absolutely no reason in the world to sell it. They've picked up some pretty good money on the way up, and so they're just trying to keep hold of what they had on the way down.
And what are your bids for the dime? Do you have them in front of you?
Oh, you know what? I don't.
That's all right. Quick word on basis, maybe 10 seconds. Has it been holding steady?
Basis, corn basis has been pretty soft. We just haven't seen a lot of demand for corn. Export demand for corn has been waning. Beans, on the other hand, with the small carryout, processors are looking for the small amounts that are left. And the bean bases have been pretty stout.
All right. Thanks much, Dave.
You bet, Todd.
That's Dave Hastings.
It's National Caviar Day. Caviar was once reserved strictly for royalty. Yet, surprisingly enough, in America during the early 19th century, caviar was routinely served during free lunches in saloons. The salty flavor encouraged thirst and enhanced beer sales. Incidentally, during the 20th century caviar boom, sturgeon were overfished nearly to the point of extinction. On this day in agricultural history in 1627, French explorers noticed oil seeping out of the ground near Cuba, New York. It was the first recorded mention of oil on the North American continent. In 1936, the Oscar Mayer Wienermobile was invented. It was a giant hot dog on wheels. Invented by Carl Mayer, nephew of Oscar Mayer, it was built by General Body Company at Chicago, Illinois. By the way, in June of 2007, a Wienermobile with a Wisconsin license plate of Yummy made headlines after having been stopped by an Arizona Department of Public Safety officer for having an alleged stolen license plate. As it turns out, the Columbia Police Department that flagged the license plate as being stolen had neglected to add that it should be stolen if only not on a Wienermobile. And in 1940, Franklin Delano Roosevelt was nominated by the Democratic National Convention for an unprecedented third term as president. FDR was sympathetic to the struggles of rural America during the Depression, and many of his New Deal programs were designed to specifically help agriculture. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason, your host. We're joined on a Friday afternoon to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast by Steve Hilberg. He's the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center. Good afternoon to you, Steve.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Weather for the weekend looks how?
It looks like typical summer weather here in the Midwest, which we really haven't had a whole lot of in the last month and a half or so. It looks fairly warm and humid for most of the weekend, with some scattered showers and thunderstorms, with the most likely areas to receive more coverage and more amounts up from Iowa across northern Illinois and perhaps northern Indiana and Michigan. And then it'll slowly shift south during the weekend, maybe a better chance here on Sunday, and then again early next week as I'd call it a poor excuse for a cold front. It's a pretty weak cold front comes down and maybe brings us a little less humidity, but that's going to be about it.
What kind of high temps do we have?
Well, actually, we're not doing too bad. I know we haven't hit 90 here at the Water Survey officially yet, and we're still talking about mid-80s right now. And I really don't see any big surge in heat. The heat's been staying to the west, as is the really high dew point. So while it's been warm and somewhat humid here, it hasn't been oppressive. And I don't think we'll see any big heat here over the next a week or so. I mean, the temperature will be in the upper 80s, maybe hit 90 but in a couple of places, or 91. But that's not unusual for this time of year and just slightly above normal.
It should be awfully good growing conditions for the crop that managed to make it out of the water.
Yeah, in fact, I know it's driving in the last couple of days. You can really smell the corn pollen as you pass some of the fields that are well-developed. But I also noticed there are some fields that are, you know, only 3 feet high at this point, late planted or replanted. So, yeah, this weather's really great, not providing too much stress. We got a lot of moisture in the soil, and it doesn't look like we'll really get into any kind of stressful conditions here in the near future.
Have you started your crop weather models up just yet there at the
Illinois? Actually, we're not going to run those this year.
Really?
We're going to be maybe tweaking them this year. There's some issues with trying to do some better job with solar radiation and soil moisture, so we've taken them offline this year and we won't be running them, but which is probably not the best time to do that, but that's what we had scheduled, so we won't be running them this year.
Oh, I will be. I'm disappointed. On Fridays, I always like to check in and see what the Midwestern Regional Climate Center crop weather models were telling us about this crop, but I suppose we'll have to just work with Daryl Good and Scott Irwin's numbers from the University of Illinois and the USDA's numbers for a while, too. If you look further out into the summer, do you see anything developing like a ridge of high pressure that might be stubborn, or is there nothing on the horizon?
Well, I would say nothing on the horizon. I know the medium-range model has been attempting to do this periodically, encroaching into the Midwest, but then it gets pulled back to the into the western U.S., and right now it doesn't look like over the next 2 weeks that's really going to happen either. In fact, toward the end of the period, which is really what we call sometimes fantasy land, it's actually showing some definite troughing over the Midwest, which would bring us cooler weather.
Okay, thanks much.
All right, Todd.
Steve Hilberg is the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center. He's based at the Illinois State Water Survey right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois, joining us on a Friday afternoon for the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason. You have a very good afternoon.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.